You're listening to The Tillage Podcast with the Irish Farmers Journal.
Hello, and you're very welcome to this week's Tillage Podcast. I'm Siobhan Walsh, recording on Wednesday night, the 24th of January this week for your records later on. Coming up, we talk about our front page story on a risk of tillage area decline. We have industry opinions to go with that story, an update on the tree crop rule as well, a report from this week's Drummond's conference, and we chat to Brian Riley and John O'Loughlin from Grassland Agro at that conference. We have an update on straw from the Fodder and Feed Committee. And as always, we look at the tillage pages, grain trends, and have the weather report. It really is a jam-packed paper and show this week, so make sure to pick up a copy. Okay, first up, that front page story highlighting the risk of a decline in tillage area. And that story extends to pages 20 and 21 in the paper. Look, it's been a very difficult year and indeed 2 years for the tillage sector. And it's, you know, it's coming to a head. We saw tillage area decline slightly last year. And at present, the industry thinks that the tillage area probably will decline this year as well. But hopefully, if government intervenes, if we send out this warning now, intervention could stop that decline in the tillage area. You know, we had that wet autumn in 2022, which put back winter cropping area and didn't help yields and profits. Then we had a wet harvest. People struggled to get crops cut. That went on into a poor autumn sowing season in 23 as well. Winter crops back about 35,000 hectares at present, and people struggling to get winter wheat in at the minute. So that land, you know, the issues with weather, pressure on land from the dairy sector as well, and to a lesser extent, solar panels, poor profits, poor yields and profits last year. And now a seed shortage as a result of the poor yields and poor quality last year. That seed shortage, so we have a seed shortage of about that 35,000 hectares. That's probably the maximum where it's at. So these are all putting pressure on the tillage sector. And then we have really unhelpful rules from the department which aren't being removed that would make things a lot easier and maybe help to keep that land in tillage. And this is all at a time when the Department of Agriculture and the government have an aim there of increasing tillage area to 400,000 hectares. So that's an increase of 52,000 hectares. So look, on page 20, we've outlined some of the things that are impacting. We first of all outlined the fabulous carbon footprint of the tillage sector, and that's why it's in the Climate Action Plan. So we've named out some good things that are being done to help tillage, the protein payment, the strong corporation measure. But remembering that strong corporation measure isn't extra money in the pockets, but is helping the straw price. Then we're looking at what's happening at the same time. So the nitrate rules, the lack of profit, acres not having good schemes for tillage, a lack of understanding from the department, that tree crop rule not being removed for 2024, a lack of TAMs for tillage and particularly to set up a tillage farm, that grant for slurry storage announced in the budget 2024, we've had no further details on that. The grazing of catch crops is another thing that's hindering progress in the sector, loss of land from buffer zones, recommended lists not coming out in time. All these things are compounding to cause serious issues in the sector. And what's being done to increase the area then? Very little. The tillage incentive scheme has been taken away for 2024. The Food Vision Tillage Group was announced in March last year, met in May, interim report in August. Nothing done from the interim report and the budget, and the final report still isn't out and probably won't be out. The group isn't meeting until February again, so that report is a while away. And then if we go to the next page, page 21, we have opinions from the sector. So we have the Grain Growers, the IFA, the Tillage Industry Ireland and the Seed Trade Association, and some really good comments there from members of the industry and farmers, asking for those complex rules to be removed, saying that funding is needed for the sector and that decisions are needed immediately ahead of spring planting. And that's, you know, that's not in a month's time. That's this week. We needed those announcements on tillage last week. Plenty in the paper this week. Our editor Jack Kendi as well is also suggesting maybe a fallow payment is needed, and that fallow payment, as bad as it might sound, it could be something that helps to maintain land in tillage, because if we have a scenario where people are thinking of not planting a crop, there's a danger of that land going into grass. And if it goes into grass for 1 year, it could be very hard to get out of it. So a fallow payment may make sense for this year. And on page two, Jack talks about the payments that are available in the UK. And indeed, we heard some of those payments at the Drummonds Conference this week from Ben Abel of Dyson Farming, who was talking about it. Okay, related to this, but a different topic, the tree crop rule. So we talked about complex rules and what's impacting the tillage sector at the minute. And one of those is the tree crop rule. There's a lot of people getting on to me at the minute about the tree crop rule. Is it still in place? Can't believe it's still in place. What are they going to do? They can't meet their tree crop rule requirements. And if they do, I suppose they're going to be sowing a crop that's not going to give them a return, is what their worry is. They want to sow the profitable crops. So, look, it is a lack of understanding there at the minute. You know, we had a decrease in winter cropping area last year, and the tree crop rule, we got a derogation from it. So the winter area is down again. It's over 50,000 hectares. It's down over the 2 years. So, you know, this rule, if people are going to meet it, it just shows a lack of regard for that target to increase tillage area. And for all those reasons that I'm not going to say again about the seed shortage and everything else. So I had asked the department numerous times about this rule. And in November, they came back to me and said that you could sow cover crops instead of complying with crop diversification and rotation. And you would have to sow 50% of your arable land in cover crops. And they'd have to be in place until the 1st of December 2024. So this was seen as a good thing. There was issues that I brought up about acres and you wouldn't be able to have enough area if you were in acres for your catch crops, etc. But a reply from the department this week, in a follow-up to that query, has given a total different answer. So if you want to sow catch crops in order to, you're not going to meet your tree crop rule requirement, you have to sow catch crops if you don't want to be penalised. But you have to sow those catch crops for 3 years. So the department came back and said this week that catch crops planted under acres do not count towards this requirement. And then the department stated that where the area of catch crops under acres is more than 50% of the total arable area, the farmer will receive his or her acres payment, but the farmer is non-compliant with the requirements of GIAC 7 and a sanction will be applied. So if you don't meet the tree crop rule requirement because you don't plant enough catch crops, you're non-compliant, you're subject to a penalty. So there's no leeway in that crop diversification requirement. Now, as always, the department, you know, aren't out to get people. They said they'll do this on a case-by-case basis. If you've been compliant in other years, there will be some leeway there. But we've absolutely no guarantee of that. That's not good for the people listening to say that you might get away with it. So at the minute, if you don't meet your tree crop rule requirements, you'll be penalised. If you try to grow catch crops instead of that tree crop rule requirement, you have to sow them for the next 3 years until 2026, which isn't practical. And if you have, let's say you have 100 hectares of land, 35 hectares are going into catch crops, 35 are into overwinter stubble. You don't have enough land left to do 50% of your arable area in catch crops for your conditionality requirements. So you're snookered. A change needs to come on that. The minister has to step in here and sort that out. And that's what farm organisations and the industry want as well. That's what they've been saying this week. Okay, on the subject of planting, I heard people talking this week about whether they got planted or not last week. Doesn't seem to have been much done at all, and that's, you know, perfectly understandable. Let's see how they got on in the Northeast. Here is Drummond's agronomist Brian Riley. We spoke to Brian at the Drummond's Winter Conference this week. It was on Wednesday. A super day, 110 or 120 farmers there. Really good day organised by Drummond's. Here's Brian.
I suppose, Siobhan, unbelievable rain. We thought we got 2 weeks of half decent weather. It was a little bit sown, but we're back to square one again. A lot of rain over the last 2 days. We're probably still, I'd say, maybe 50 or 60%, maybe a little bit more in some north cloud. Yeah. But as you come more further south, it gets worse and worse.
What we're going to hope to still try and incorporate, try and get some wet weight still sown up, if we can possibly. Weather hopefully will dry up and we have the nerves to do that.
Yeah, And you encourage people today to try do that and incorporate a bit of fertilizer into the seed bed and certain varieties then as well. So maybe just
So we were saying there, like, the you got Spearhead, probably Top, JB Diego and Graham, maybe the main varieties you put in there today, Siobhan, out to mid-February. Yeah, treat it like a spring crop. Try and drive it on early, keep the crows away from it, and say you get a bit of nitrogen and P and K in the seedbed. Try and manipulate that tillers and manipulate the plant to grow.
Crows will be the big fun. Important to get that in because we have a seed shortage, Brian. So how are you fixed up here for seeds? Brendan gave us a bit of a rundown, but you might just tell our listeners.
Yeah, so seed has been difficult to get, very, very difficult to get, and we're still not kind of unsure what we kind of need because we're still hoping to get some more drilled. Look, seed has come from Poland, that direction. It's even come as far as Hungary. Look, it's good quality seed. That's the one thing we can say about it. It's high germination. It's good quality, 1,000 grain weights, so it looks good. Varieties look to be good, but as the more pressure comes on, the varieties are going to become less scarce and they're going to get worse and worse. So I would say just do a little bit of research into what varieties you're sowing. Make sure they're okay, suit your farmer type, and make sure they can always stand.
Yeah, and we should say it's a small amount that's been imported as well. The majority of seed that's there is Irish.
I suppose it's probably 40%, maybe 35-40% will be imported there, but majority will be Irish, yeah.
Yeah, and one farmer there asking about black grass. You're very confident. The seed trade has been diligent in getting seed that's clean and free of grass weeds.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, we just, yeah absolutely. The trade is very, very mindful of grasses. Like, we will not take a load of stuff in from to Drummond's unless it has got that orange cert.
Okay.
And it's very, very important. But look, as I said to you, the 60 or 70% of the seed is of native Irish varieties of Rockway, Skyway, of Geraldine. The good varieties, we know that, and they will yield. So, yeah.
Rockway and Skyway, of course, are your spring barley varieties. Michael went through them there on the screen. You might tell us a bit about those varieties, why you've chosen them, because they have come through your trial site in Termonfeckin.
I suppose it was Skyway was first. Skyway is a pan-European variety, and it's been top of the list nearly in the last 2 or 3 years. Great variety, great grain, stands okay, good agronomic disease package. Skyway, I'll say Rockway is a little bit different, probably stands a bit better than Skyway, yields a little less, but still has very good disease characteristics. So look at the two varieties that will not let you down in any kind of situation.
Yeah, there was results there as well from the trial site, the different agronomy plans that you have. Molly was in there, and there was a trial on no if side on Molly, obviously.
Yeah.
So what did that trial show? You might just go through it a little bit if you can refresh your memory on it.
The trial, so basically we took a normal variety.
Yeah.
No names, it's just a normal variety. It's not BYD resistant or tolerant or whatnot. Normal barley variety you put in the field. And we just compared it to Molly. So we obviously didn't spray the Molly, okay?
Yeah.
And we done three other treatments, which was normal common practice in the field, and see can we get any difference. And I think the difference was 0.4.
Yeah, it was 400 kgs.
And that's been replicated in Chagas as well.
Yeah.
So, they are working, without doubt. We would have thought in that situation when we planned the trial that we wouldn't have got any yield increase at all. And to the naked eye, Siobhan, you wouldn't have seen any.
Okay.
But when we cut the yield, yes, there was a difference. And in quality as well. There was in the Molly, it was a better KPH.
Yeah. It just shows the importance of that trial site, though, doesn't it?
And
having a region-specific trial site, and gives you great confidence then to go out to growers and advise them.
Well, we can stand up today and we say, look, this variety, Molly, it was 0.4 of a tonne in our trial site. Now, we'll repeat over a couple of years, of course, but department will back us up in them trials there as well.
Yeah.
So it's great to see. It's a great resource to have at our doorsteps, and a great resource here for all the growers here that attended today.
Sulphur was something that stood out in those trials as well. Sulphur at T0. You're encouraging that in Drummond's.
Yes, because years ago, say we had varieties that were good on rust. Now we're going to go with T0 spray because a lot of them, say, take Graham for argument's sake, that's 50% of the acres on wheat. So that needs a T0 spray of a strawberry lurin to keep the rust off it. But we have found by adding strawberry lurins and sulfurs, not all sulfurs, but some sulfurs, that you're getting big yield lifts. And it's the fundamental thing that we've seen in any wheat trials the last 3 years is by incorporation of sulfur with strawberry lurin.
So is your sulfur nutrition, is it biostimulant? Michael went through the different ones there. how do you think it's affecting the crop? Is it true nutrition or is it having an effect on disease?
It's fungicidal.
So he spoke about sulfur being able to produce a gas, and then that gas is hydrogen sulfide, which you all know from Surrey. So that's toxic then to the septoria.
Yeah, look, our sulfur will be going down as native fungicidal acid properties, but I think that's... Yeah, other sulfurs are more kind of trace elements that kind of sit in the leaves, and they don't do this. So you just have to be kind of mindful of that.
Yeah, farmers need to question what they're putting on.
Oh, yeah.
And Brian, you did a presentation then on your liquid nitrogen, and that's a big part of your business now. You put huge investment into Drada. So if farmers want liquid nitrogen, what can you offer them?
We can offer them anyway. Liquid nitrogen there is available from all our branches there at the minute. We can obviously, you can do a tank storage scheme, or you can buy a tank off us. We can deliver it. We've seen why we got into liquid nitrogen maybe 7 or 8 years ago is because of the trial site, actually, because of corn or some fields not overlapping. It's just creates a totally different trial
site. You could turn off your sections or whatever.
Absolutely. And everything is like a spirit level after, and everything is getting the same.
Okay.
There can never be any, say if you get a windy day and you send a contractor spreading, or even myself, as I was spreading it, you can always, what we say, you get a bit of striping. With liquid, you don't get that. So it's paramount in the trials that we use liquid nitrogen the whole time to keep a level and accurate results.
And when you're accurate, then you can cut your rates.
Absolutely. Yeah. We cut between 10 and 15%.
Yeah. So that's a massive saving for people.
And it ticks all the boxes, sustainability too. And we all have to get more from less. And nitrogen is one thing that's going to be scrutinised over the next couple of years.
And you're able to make blends then. So if someone wants trace elements or magnesium or something in...
Within reason, we can make blends to suit any crop. Mm. Within reason. So if you want more sulfur or less sulfur, or you want boron or you want zinc on your manganese or whatnot, or stabilisers. And a lot of people even asking for fulvic acids. But I think with acids, you have to be careful with liquid. Different acids react differently. So there's a lot of work being done in the trials out at the moment. But yes, we can do a lot of bespoke blends for you. But we just have to know. It's like everything else. In peak season, you have to know about these things first.
Thanks to Brian for joining us. Just to mention on the tillage pages this week, then we have Vijay Bhaskar from Chagas Oak Park. You're all well acquainted with Vijay at this stage. He works on the grass weeds, doing loads of good work on resistance. And on this week's pages, Vijay has a really good article, really interesting and topical, and plenty of pictures and a table there to guide you as well. So Vijay has been testing glyphosate, different rates to control different grass weeds. And what he's finding basically is not all glyphosate is created equally. So some of the glyphosates are not performing the same. So he's basically telling us if you're using a Roundup product, an original glyphosate product, you can use a lower rate than if you're using a generic product. And that's probably a bad way of phrasing it. You still need to use an optimum rate of a Roundup product, but you most likely need to use more product if you're using a generic product, and that's because of the different formulations. So a generic product will be formulated differently to a Roundup product, and the different ingredients can affect the efficacy of the product. So really important that we use rates that are going to control the weeds, that are not going to help resistance to develop, they're not going to leave plants behind that weren't fully controlled. So a really important article from Vijay, that table is in there as well, so make sure to have a look at that. And just make sure that you're using the correct rates when you're controlling your grass weeds or going out to spray off your stubbles in the next few weeks. Okay, back to the Drummonds Conference. And I caught up with John O'Loughlin from Grassland Agro. He is a reminder on the fertiliser database and what we need to do about it and soil sampling. John O'Loughlin, thanks very much for joining us here at Drummonds.
No worries, Ron.
Good to have you on as always. very important, a serious subject for you now at the start.
Oh yeah, so the price of fertilizer, you're a class. You did it to me before.
She brought it up. Well, where are we, John? Where are we at for Cann?
Cann, I suppose, is going to lift slightly, unfortunately, and urea has actually strengthened slightly in the last couple of days, but I suppose there is stock in the country. So, in general, fertiliser has been relatively quiet, but it's all going to kick off fairly soon, I'd say, Siobhan. Like, the long-term forecast, the long-range forecast is fairly good. So, hopefully, it'll be winter sowings caught up on, and, you know, it's. I think it'll all come with a bang fairly quick.
Yeah, hopefully, John, hopefully. No direct prices there. But anyway, we'll move on. You're not going to give them to me.
Dodge the bullet again. Yeah.
So, National Fertiliser Database. What do we have to do? We should have done stuff already, but we still have time to do it.
Yeah, so the National Fertilizer Database, I suppose, is a big change. It's come about through our Nitrates Action Programme.
Yeah.
Basically, what that's doing is it's tracking fertilizer from, I suppose, ourselves to a distributor, a merchant or a co-op, and then out onto farm. So when it lands onto any of the listeners' farm, that there'll be, I suppose, traceability. And now, why that's really important is inspections are going to go up, but also you need to prove that you have a requirement for phosphorus.
Yeah.
So previously you were assumed to be index 3 to have a maintenance allowance. Now everyone is assumed index 4.
Yeah.
So every acre needs to have a soil sample now, Siobhan.
Yeah, so remind us now on our soil samples. So how many years does it have to, can we keep it for, and how many hectares does it have to be on?
So it's 4 years, four years, and max of 5 hectares.
Okay.
I think 4 hectares for grass.
4 hectares for grass, yeah. Okay. I think 4 hectares is probably the better way to go anyway.
100%. Like, it's such valuable information, Siobhan. Like, you know, like, it's so important now in the climate that we're facing with sustainability. But economically, like, if you can save pea is always going to be the most expensive nutrient. If we can save some of that, that's going to be really, really positive for the bottom line. I suppose it is very challenging conditions, especially in the tillage sector. So it's really important that we control the cost of our inputs and we're spreading what we need, kind of tailoring our nutrient management plan to what's actually required by the plant.
And the cost of those soil samples over the 4 years?
Negligible.
Yeah. So something, look, if your soil samples aren't in date at the minute, that's the next job on your list. John, you're talking about soil health here today. I suppose the first thing I thought about soil health is when you get that soil sample, check your pH. That's probably the easiest thing to do. Get out your lime. What else were you telling the audience here today?
Yeah, so listen, I was delighted to be here today because in fairness to the lads in Drummonds, like, they're very proactive in the area of soil and plant nutrition.
Yeah.
And they've kind of been leading that. Like, they've been kind of using that as a strategy, as I suppose the chemicals that we have are maybe reduced, that trying to increase the resilience of the plant there by supplying the right nutrients at the right time is really, really important. And trace elements, they've gone down, you know, they have a lot of experience in that. So, like, all these things are really, really positive going forward. But what I was talking about, I suppose the key thing is that when someone talks about soil health, usually at a tillage function, they kind of lambast the plough, like.
Yeah.
And, like, in my personal opinion, I think it alienates probably 75% of the audience straight away. And in reality, there's always going to be a place for the plough in Irish tillage systems, in my opinion. Now, you tell me if I'm wrong, like.
Yeah, no, totally agree, John. But, so, I suppose soil health, though, is such a broad subject.
It is.
And sometimes when people hear it, they're like, oh, jeepers, like, where do I start?
Yeah.
But, like, they've probably started already. They're probably maybe putting out a bit of slurry, a bit of dung, maybe chopping their straw.
Exactly.
Like, what's your advice to people on soil health?
My advice is that you look at, you divide it up in the chemical, physical and biological. The chemical is the most pressing at the moment. So that's our soil sample that we talked about. And as you said, getting your lime right is non-negotiable.
Yeah.
Like, just get that done, whether it's rented ground or not. Don't care.
Yeah.
Like, the efficiency of the nitrogen is completely disimproved if you don't have your pH right. So
and your P's and K's, your indexes will come up, like, you're
absolutely you're releasing a lot of that fixed phosphorus, so that's really, really important. Then, so getting that right, then in relation to the biological and the physical, and, like, you know, from you're probably the person that done most of the work on this early on and chopping straw in Irish conditions, but, like, that is really, really beneficial to building organic matter in the soil. And what I was saying today is that we're always coming to these events looking for the next big thing, you know, what's the new trace element, like, what's going to save our bacon when we can't spread nitrogen. And I was saying just that carbon actually is, and that's carbon that you return to the soil through chopping straw or organic manures, as you say, or activating the carbon in the soil by remediating any maybe compaction. Because, like, our soil health is very, very unique, like, where we would have a tillage soil in Ireland that might be 4% organic matter. You would be a king if you had 4% in the Midwest, where a lot of maybe some of the regen, I say that in quote.
Midwest America.
Not awfully, or Roscommon, like. But in Midwest America, where we're trying to maybe adapt some of these soil health regen practices, like, it's not relevant, like.
Yeah.
So we have to kind of look at our own situation, our own soils, and then cut our cloth to measure. So they are kind of the practical things, because we want to reduce the plough maybe a little bit. But as we say, we're going to have to plow in a lot of instances. Yeah. And then how can we get that carbon back into the soil? Chopping straw. Now, you know,
you get paid to do it.
Yeah. Well, I'm reluctant now. Like, straw is so scarce and so dear this year, though.
All right.
Yeah, if anyone wants to hit me up with
things, wrong podcast, John. Yeah.
But like, that is a big store of carbon. But you have to do it or consistently over a few years to reap the benefits. The organic manures, like, listen, there's an awful lot of talk about nitrates, and there's an awful lot of talk about the collaboration. I think it's going to take leadership. I don't think it's going to be from me or you. I think it's going to be from farmers. Yeah. I don't think it's going to be from Chagas. I think it's going to be farmers that go out there and develop that relationship, and then we use them as maybe the blueprint of how it works and get their experience, because there is the potential, there always has been, but we haven't had maybe enough collaboration in the past. But I think it'll be farmer driven going forward.
Absolutely. A good note to end on. Thanks, John.
No worries.
Thanks to John for that. And as always, good for the prices there, John. Anyway, we also spoke with Ben Abel at the Drummonds Conference. And Ben is the head of crops at Dyson Farming. And we'll bring you an interview, hopefully, with Ben next week. There was loads at the Drummonds Conference, and we'll have some of that online in the next few days. Okay, Grain Trends is next. And look, markets are very quiet at the minute, which isn't too bad a thing, I suppose. It depends on what way you look at it. Yeah, so where are we? So December wheat closed last Friday at 228.75, and it remained there up to Tuesday evening. I'm just going to check my app now to see where it finished on Wednesday evening. And in the meantime, then, just London wheat for November closed last week at 199.75, and it was at 198.50 on Tuesday evening. So that Matif wheat price then finished. So it actually went up on Wednesday. So it finished at 2.30 on Wednesday evening. So a bit of positivity in markets there. Oilseed rape, there was positivity early this week. And if you're looking at the paper this week, it's out of date, because on Wednesday evening, the oilseed rape price changed again. So not too bad. Where am I looking at? So the August price closed at 4.30 last week, went to 4.31.25 on Tuesday. And... oh no, it's gone down. Sorry. Yeah. So on, the August price is at 427.25 on Wednesday evening. That's where it closed at. While we're on market, straw is also a market that people are talking a lot about at the minute. And I attended the National Fodder and Food Security Commission meeting on Wednesday afternoon. It was a hot topic at that. The INHFA, the ICSA, ICMSA all brought up concerns around the straw shortage, particularly as we go into lambing and calving season. And as we know, there are imports coming in. It was brought up at the meeting that, you know, it's not ideal to have imports coming in, and we need to be checking these loads that there's not grass weeds coming in them. But the reality is the loads are coming in. I found the meeting refreshing. All the farm organisations were very supportive of tillage farmers in the meeting, and said that we need to protect the area of tillage, work together. They said, you know, about getting livestock farmers to start to plan with tillage farmers to try and get them to order their straw needs early. And certainly, look, a very positive meeting from that point of view. And it looks like Chagas now will put in draw stocks into their fodder surveys, so they'll get an idea of where they're at in those future surveys. But certainly very positive from the livestock sector that the tillage area needs to be protected, and that we need to work possibly to grow it, but certainly to get more organised on ordering stock. Now I have the forecast in from Met Éireann. So Friday, a fresher, drier day with bright or sunny spells developing earlier on. Temperatures between 7 and 10 degrees. And then at night time, lowest temperatures of 4 to 8 degrees. Saturday, be a little more in the way of cloud, patches of light rain and drizzle. Temperatures of 8 to 10 degrees. And on Saturday night, 7 to 9 degrees. So very mild. Sunday, mild on Sunday. Dull and damp start will turn into drier conditions. There will be some rain and drizzle. Highest temperatures of 12 to 15 degrees. And turning wet on Sunday night in a cool 2 degrees in the north to 9 degrees in the south. And then the outlook for Monday to Wednesday. Current indications suggest the next week will stay generally unsettled, with some breezy conditions and outbreaks of rain and drizzle feeding in from the Atlantic at times. Heavier rainfalls, especially on Monday, but occasionally drier spells may develop later. Temperatures around average or slightly above, with frost and ice unlikely. So Friday doesn't look like too bad a day. And Saturday actually doesn't look too bad on the rainfall either. So plenty of rain there on Thursday. Friday, not too bad. Saturday, almost no rain. Sunday, 3, 1, 1, 6 mils, kind of in the north and the west. Monday looks like a fairly wet day. Tuesday, not too bad, but rain everywhere on Tuesday and Wednesday, but maybe not heavy amounts. Before we go, a reminder of the Chagas National Tillage Conference that's on next week. We have details online, and indeed they're on the Chagas website as well. And just a reminder, if you do want to go to the Tillage Conference, slightly different this year, you have to register beforehand, and registration closes on Monday night. That's the 29th at 11:30 p.m. So get in before that. And the reason for that is because there's workshops in the afternoon, and those workshops require numbers to be organised beforehand. So just a little insight. I know at the start of the conference, they'll have the results of that winter planting survey, which will be eagerly awaited. There's going to be some research insights, talk on adding value to produce in the tillage sector. And then the workshops after dinner, are there synergies for the tillage and dairy sector? What should the 2030 Food Vision Tillage Group recommendations mean for the sector? Getting to grips with grass weeds, disease control decisions for 24, and getting the most out of your bean crop. So registration, as I said beforehand, and then registration that morning from 9 o'clock. Conference kicks off at 9:45 and closes at 4:15. And to Chagas clients, the cost is 25. Non-clients in industry 45, and lunch is an additional €25. So yeah, get to the Tillage Conference if you can. A great day out, as always. That's it for this week. Thanks to our guests, to Brian and John, to everyone who gave opinions this week, to you for listening and for reading. Pick up this week's paper, it's a bumper tillage edition. Thanks to Claire and Jerome for editing. Until next week, stay safe and keep the tillage flag flying.
We hope you enjoyed this Irish Farmers Journal podcast. You can find all our podcasts at farmersjournal.ie/podcast and on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.